And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul DiTino. I'm Lance Medow. Starting an hour earlier than usual because of some media availabilities that will be taking place today. So obviously we're going to try to get the show in, get to your phone calls at 201-939-4513, as well as hashtag Giants Chat. Giants season has come to an end as they fell to the Packers on Sunday at Lambeau Field 38-13. So we'll break down the game. We'll get your reaction as well. And, Paul, let's start with some of the issues that plagued the Giants yesterday. And you can really go to a variety of different facets of this team. There were some special teams breakdowns. There was defensive breakdowns in the second half. And, obviously, the offense, once again, struggling to put points on the board. And this was something that we've talked about for the majority of the season. Six straight games, including the playoff game, Paul, to end the season where the offense failed to score at least 20 points.
Well, you know, Lance, the Giants had four drops in the first quarter alone. Two touchdown passes that went through their hands. And, you know, here's the thing. Much like in basketball in the NBA, when a team plays well and has a 15-point lead, you know the other team's going to make a run. And the question is, was your lead big enough? And then can you seize the momentum back when they make their run? Well, last night with the Giants, they totally controlled the first quarter, totally controlled the first half, and should have had a nice big lead to chew on going into halftime. Knowing full well, the Packers would try to make a run in the second half, but if it went according to plan, they wouldn't have enough. Well, what happened? The Giants go into halftime, even though they totally control the game, and because of an amazing touchdown throw by Rodgers, and then something that fell from the sky in a Hail Mary, the Giants are not only down by a point at 7-6, they're down 14-6. I can't even begin to tell you how dangerous I thought that was. I talked to Bob Glauber of Newsday. We happened to stop in the men's washroom at halftime. And Bob goes, "So what do you think?" I said, "This is a big problem for the Giants. They have totally controlled this game, and they are down by 8 points. This is a big problem." King catches the touchdown. It's 14-13. And then what happens? Now the Packers make their run.
They answered. They responded immediately.
And that's the thing. Because where at that point the Giants should have been up by two scores, they're down by a point at the time the Packers make their run. And, of course, it snowballed. And now the Giants are climbing uphill, and there was just no way for them to ever get over the mountain at that point. Very disappointing. You want to talk about the bad problems? You talk about the drop passes. You talk about, you said, the special teams breakdowns. They got nothing out of their return games.
Field position.
They got nothing out of their coverage units, which totally tilted the field in the Packers' direction and helped the Packers seize and then maintain momentum. You talk about the DRC injury, which was crippling to the Giants. This guy's an all-NFL player, second-team all-NFL player. He comes out. That's a big deal. Maybe now people will understand why the last half of the season especially, I kept saying, DRC is playing lights out. Well, you know how much you missed him yesterday, right?
And he got hurt on the first series. So we're talking about the majority of the game. He's in and out dealing with the injury.
Now, of course, they lost Jordy Nelson too. But the DRC loss was much bigger to the Giants than the Jordy Nelson one was. And then, of course, like I say, you get the Hail Mary falling out of the sky, which was ridiculous. And then I have to say, this was probably the first time since JPP got hurt where you really missed him, because they had done a good job the last couple of games of the season in overcoming the loss of JPP. I think they missed him last night.
Well, for the first quarter, though, I wouldn't have said that, Paul, because they were getting pressure on it. Remember, they had four of their five sacks in the first half, and we're talking about Romeo Okwara, Kerry Wynn, Cody Sensabaugh. They were spreading the wealth. Spags was mixing and matching. But as the game progressed, what I felt was Packers got some semblance of a running game with Christian Michael on that drive where he started off with four consecutive carries for 27 total yards. He could start working in the play action, and now all of a sudden the Giants need to account for the run. Things open up in the middle of the field.
Well, and Rodgers started to get hot.
Yeah, he got his rhythm.
And as he found his rhythm, at that point, the Giants secondary, now being without DRC, I got to go back and check all the blitz numbers. I thought they pulled back a little bit on the gambling because they figured, okay, well, we're a little skippy back there now. Maybe we can't go full throttle trying to get after Rodgers. Well, that's where you miss a JPP, because now you really do have to get there with four, and Jason would have. I think he would have helped him in that situation, you know. But it is what it is.
We've got plenty more to break down here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. For those of you watching on Twitter, we invite you over to Giants.com to watch the remainder of the program. Lance Medel, Paul DeTito with you here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, discussing the Giants' 38-13 loss to the Green Bay Packers. You just alluded to DRC's injury, some of the defensive breakdowns, but you also touched on special teams, Paul, and I want to head back there here for a second.
Yeah.
In terms of starting field position, and I wrote down where the Giants started versus where the Packers started, and it's really night and day in this contest.
Yep.
In the first half, you know, Green Bay had drives where they started from their own 45, their own 44, the Giants 38 that led to a touchdown, and then the second half, their own 37, the Giants 37, and their own 45. So that's three possessions in each half where, I mean, you're nearly in midfield already just to start the drive.
And you know Crosby's capable of hitting one from mid-50 anyway, so that's practically two first downs or so away from, or maybe three tops from getting at least a field goal.
3 points.
You know, average start for the game, field position, the Green Bay, their own 36, the Giants, their own 25. And, of course, the time of possession, which we told you folks was going to be huge. Green Bay had the ball for 34 and a half minutes, the Giants for only 25 and a half. And that's why power running game. Three important words, folks. I've been singing these praises of the power running game for a long, long time. A power running game will serve you well, not only in the regular season, but especially in the playoffs. And where was the Giants' power running game yesterday? Nowhere.
17 carries after a game in which they ran the ball 40 times. Now, I think that strategy played a role where when you're playing catch-up, you essentially have to abandon the run. Now, that was in the second half. In the first half, you know, they were trying to establish it with Rashad Jennings. He had three consecutive runs on one drive. They did work Perkins in at the beginning, but then all of a sudden, Green Bay, when it became 14-6, Paul, it's almost as if the Giants now had to say to themselves, we got to get a little too pass happy because we're not in a position where we can have the luxury of pounding the football anymore since we can't get too far behind here.
Well, 12 carries for 37 yards in the first half. I mean, that's not enough. It's not enough. And, I mean, that's 3.1 a carry, which is also not effective either. You know, that's just not supposed to be against the Packers defense that was somewhat susceptible against the run. I know their secondary was Swiss cheese, but you're supposed to be able to run against these guys.
Well, they were eighth overall in the NFL. Green Bay has been pretty stingy against the run. Their issue has been more in the secondary.
They've been giving up 114 yards a game on the ground over the second half of the season. I mean, you got to do better than that.
Well, no way were they a lockdown defense, but like I said, the reason why I think the carries weren't as balanced is because the lead got away from them.
Well, then it had to be. Right,
in
but the first
half.
The
first half on the first few drives, if you look.
First half, 12 for 37 on the ground. Eli was 13 of 21 through the air. That's not balanced.
They had two carries for Perkins on the first possession. Three carries, excuse me, for Perkins on the first possession. Then on the second possession.
And how well they do?
Well, he ran for -2, -6, and 0.
Okay.
That was the first possession.
But here's what happened. On that first possession then, they wound up zipping the ball down the field because of the early runs.
Correct, because it opened up opportunities down
exactly.
the field. And then the drop passes killed them, and that's what stunted all of a sudden that drive.
We said all along, the one thing that you didn't want to do against the Packers defense was to allow them to overplay the pass because their pass rush and their front was pretty stout. So once the Giants got behind in the second half by two scores and they had to start winging it, that played into the Packers' hands anyway, even though their secondary was terrible.
And their secondary, remember, was banged up in week 5, too, and the Giants weren't able to take advantage of that group, too. Now, on the second possession, they ran with Perkins on the first play for two. Then Manning went through a series of passes, and that was the only run. Then was the three and out, which I was referring to when Rashad Jennings ran it three consecutive times. There was the draw on 3rd and 11. He ran 10 yards. He was 1 yard shy of the first down.
And that was by the way, that play right there, that was a bad one. They needed that first down.
Of course.
That was a big momentum play.
Well, and
right
also
there.
Because of field position, remember.
No question.
They were deep in their own territory on that possession, too. Let's not forget
Absolutely.
About that.
That was a big, big play. How about this? Aside from that, 14-13, Packers get a 28-yard kickoff return out to their own 37 midway through the third quarter. And then, of course, what does Rodgers do? Passes of 13, 20, 30 to Cobb, touchdown. Game over, 21-13.
Well, momentum.
And even though it was only 8 points, you could see the slope was slippery right there.
Well, there's two sets of plays to me that were momentum killers. It was the one you just referred to, Paul, when you make it a one-point game and then Aaron Rodgers marches down the field in the series of three plays, gets the touchdown. The other one is there was a 3rd-and-1 in the first half, and Bobby Rainey was utilized in the short yard situation. They failed to pick that up. Green Bay gets the ball back, and then obviously that leads to the Hail Mary touchdown. Those two, the change of possessions on both of those right there.
They were huge.
That was huge. I mean, that was the game right there.
And Coach was asked about Bobby Rainey. He said that we thought that was the best opportunity with the best guy to get the first down. I don't know. But, I mean, hey, I'm not getting into the play calling here. The Giants did not, on the field, play well. Let's not talk about play calling. Again, they didn't play well on the field.
In many different facets, whether it be special teams, whether it be offense, and whether it be defense, you can certainly go across the board. All right, we're going to open up the phone lines here, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. Let's start the festivities off here with Monty in Wisconsin. Monty, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hi.
How you guys doing?
Doing all right, Monty. What do you got for us?
Hey, first-time caller, long-time listener. I went to the game yesterday. I flew up from San Antonio. I'm in the military out there, man, and I know it's going to be a long ride back. I got a whole bunch of Dallas fans down there waiting for me to give me a hard time. But I bleed blue all the time, man, and I just wanted to make a couple comments.
Sure.
And ask a question.
Well, first of all, thank you for your service, Monty. That's number one. Appreciate that. And number two, yeah, the floor is yours.
All right, thanks. Hey, so I thought Bobby Rainey's special teams were awful last night. I don't know what was going on with Brad Wing, but the punts didn't look like his normal punts. And then the other thing was I saw a non-existent pass rush in the second half, and that really, to me, opened up Aaron Rodgers and gave him time to expose our secondary with the DRC injury.
And that's where you missed JPP. There's no question. I kept thinking to myself, if only JPP was here now. That's when it really manifested itself for me. First time since he got hurt about a month ago, where I really started to wonder in my own head, wow, wouldn't it be different if he were here? Because up until that point, they had done a good job compensating.
Well, and the combination of DRC's injury, too. I think the absence
There's no
of
question.
JPP and the DRC.
That's what did
then
it.
Then Spags all of a sudden probably has to say to himself, I got to change maybe the philosophy a little bit because of the options on the field.
Yeah, the other thing, too, was I saw they tried to give DRC another go. They put him on special teams, and it looked like he re-aggravated the injury.
Yeah.
And at that point, I was sitting in the stands with a couple other Giants fans, and, you know, we were like, that's a big blow for us right there.
It was critical. And I will tell you, saw him in the locker room coming out after the game was over. He was like on one leg. He was in severe pain. He was really, really hobbling. Gave it everything. And again, I tip my cap to him because I thought he was phenomenal this year. And, again, I said it earlier. Now you know how good he really was, because when he wasn't in there, look what happened.
Mm-hmm. Hey, and the last thing I got for you guys was the play call. I was sitting in the stands, it was 3rd-and-1, and I saw Bobby Rainey in the backfield, and I said to myself, where is Rashad Jennings and Paul Perkins right now? What do you guys think about that?
Well, in those short yardage situations, and I brought this up yesterday when I was on, they tended to use Rashad Jennings and Paul Perkins when you look at just how the season went about. I mean, Rainey was on the previous play, Paul. It was a 2nd-and-9. They dumped it off to Rainey. He picked up 8 yards off a short pass. And clearly they stuck with him on the field. Not saying that that was the rationale because he was on the previous play, but what I found interesting was most short yardage situations during the course of this season, Jennings or Perkins had usually been the option in the backfield. So this was either trying to give the Packers a different look in that scenario or just sticking with the running back that was on the field.
Shame of that is, you know, you're talking at that point right after the two-minute warning and on the 2nd-and-9 you're talking about, he gets the 8-yard short slant. Mm-hmm. My goodness, that first down there, and you're talking about the Giants milking the last, minute and 45 off the clock at the end of the half. Maybe, because they're out at their own 40-yard line. Maybe even scoring points Instead, the Packers get it back, and they get a touchdown out of it before you go into the locker room.
Yeah, maybe it's 10-7 instead of 14-6 right there.
You talk about disgusting turn of events. Wow.
Yeah. We were shocked. We were sitting in the stands, and we were just – our minds were like, what just happened there?
I will say this, though. In Randy's defense, he had no chance. As soon as he touched that ball, they were all over him. He did not – and that goes back to what I keep saying, power running game. Where was the line on that play when they needed to get that yard?
A lot of penetration. All right, Monty.
Thank you.
Appreciate the phone call.
Thanks,
you got
guys.
It. Thanks so much for chiming in. Let's hear from Sean in Richmond. Sean, what's happening? Sean, are you there? Sean going once. Sean going twice.
Sorry. Yes, sir.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Hello.
I hear you loud and clear, Sean. What's happening?
Hey, how you guys doing this morning?
Doing all right.
Hi.
What's next with you?
Yeah, I just like the gentleman before, I bleed blue. I came out the womb in blue. But, you know, the thing that I saw last night, it has been happening to us all season, is Eric Flowers is killing us. I mean, it's overload blitz Eric Flowers side, and he cannot handle it. I don't know if we need to start bringing our running back and switching him to that side to pick up the blitz, but third downs, I watched it last night over and over, all season, over and over on Eric Flowers' side, and they just overload blitz. And he can't stop it. He can't do anything.
Well, the pressure really picked up, I thought, in the second half yesterday, Paul. For the first few quarters, I thought the Giants had provided Eli Manning enough time to survey the field and get rid of the football. But in the second half, you saw when Green Bay had a lead, Clay Matthews, Julius Peppers, Dom Capers changed his strategy too, where he gave them the green light to go after the quarterback, and they were certainly successful as a result.
Well, they could because the Giants didn't keep them honest because they couldn't run the ball.
Not a lot of
points. I'm going to tell you something right out. I said this going into the game. Eli Manning did not have to be great in this game. He just had to be okay. And to be honest, 23 of 44, we know four drops. If you want to go more than that, fine. But let's just take the four guaranteed drops in the first quarter. 299 yards. And I said this, could the O-line hold its own? Two sacks and one pick. I'm actually okay with that. He only got three quarterback hits on the stat sheet. Is that what it came down to? Hold on a second. Let me take a look at this.
Take a look.
I want to tell you, yeah, three quarterback hits and two sacks and one pick. You know, that was enough. The pass pro was actually enough to get this job done. The problem is, if you put that stat line up with 17 carries for 70 yards, that's not enough. That's the problem. You got about 60 yards missing off of that rushing total. That's the problem.
Well, keep in mind, entering this game, the Giants were 7-0 when they had more than 25 carries in a contest.
Exactly.
So that's the money stat, 25 carries. You get to 25 carries, you're looking good. 17, not necessarily the case.
And remember, over the last eight games of the season, Giants had averaged 108 yards a game on the ground. Six of the eight games, they had over 100 yards ground.
That play action. You got to have, like you said, a good run game to operate off that play action. He loves that thing. He's thrived over his whole career.
Oh, so is Aaron Rodgers, too. And he had the run game somewhat in the second half. Appreciate the phone call, Sean.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for chiming in. How about Jimmy in Queens? Jimmy, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You got it, Jimmy. Thanks for making it. So what do you have for us?
I'm just all Giants fans, I think, are sick today. You know, I feel like calling out of work. It's a hard day for us Giants fans. But yesterday, watching the game, and there's a few turning points that I felt. I think the Bobby Rainey catching the ball on the 3-yard line and running out of bounds instead of letting the ball go out of bounds and getting it at the 45. I think that was huge.
Inexplicable.
Yeah, it was.
Didn't
I felt
help.
Like just special teams in general, you know, a couple of times Harris caught the ball back there where he could have let it go into the back of the end zone. And then we were kind of fighting with our backs against the wall for like the whole second half, and it was harder to come back that way.
Well, here's an example of what you're pointing to, Jimmy. The fact that Dwayne Harris fielded the ball at the Giants' 8-yard line after I think he ran it for 1 yard, so he fielded it to 7. They go three and out, the Giants. Eli Manning gets sacked on the third down. So all of a sudden that puts Brad Wing back in his own end zone. He only has a 37-yard punt. Packers take over on the Giants 38. What do? They get a touchdown because of great field position. Then the Bobby Rainey play that you referred to, they start at their own three. The Giants go three and out. Once again, you put Brad Wing in a tough spot. He comes through with a 50-yard punt, but still good field position for the Green Bay Packers because they take over on the Giants 37, and they wind up with a field goal. So that's 10 points right there that the Packers got as a result of the Giants pinning themselves too far back because of field position and the Packers capitalizing off the punt with favorable field position. That flips games right there.
Right, exactly. And I think in the first half, the Packers couldn't stop what we were doing. You know, it was basically the Giants beating themselves with the drop passes, and I think the O-line protection was great in the first half.
It was.
And the defense, they held up well. Aaron Rodgers was kind of flustered. He didn't know what to do. And, of course, when you keep giving a guy like that the ball over and over again, the more opportunity you give him, he's going to strike and he's going to score.
I'm gonna break down another stat for you real simple. The Giants only took over the ball outside their 35-yard line twice in the game. Had a field goal and a touchdown on both of those nice field position drives. The Packers took over the ball on their 35 or better six times. Three touchdowns, a field goal, and two no scores. When the field is tilted that heavily, you try running uphill in roller skates and see how you're going to do.
Yeah, in the snow.
Yeah.
It was a tough loss for the Giants, especially the way the game started. The energy and the way that things were going, I was thinking that it was one. It was one, but the games are 60 minutes, and the first 15 minutes were great, and after that it started going all downhill. I think right before the half ends, if they let this guy catch the ball and tackle him on the 6-yard line, the game goes into the half and they're down by one.
Well, a play here or there certainly could have been a difference maker, especially with what transpired, as you mentioned, late in the second quarter, where it looked as if, the Giants up 6-0, they're getting to Aaron Rodgers. He has nobody down the field that he could throw to. He's running out of the pocket and has no real lanes to run. And then all of a sudden, they get the touchdown to Davante Adams, and then they get the ball back after the Giants failed to convert on the 3rd-and-1, and then the Hail Mary. It's very similar. I don't like to go back and compare it to the history, but in 2011, it was this similar thing. I mean, listen, think about how the momentum went in favor of the Giants in 2011, and the Packers are going back in the locker room and saying the same thing. I mean, how did this game get out of hand all of a sudden?
It's funny. It's the Giants go into the locker room down 14-6 at the half, and at that point they had held the Packers to 147 total yards of offense and, one of seven on third down. What more could you want,
Right.
And you're going into the locker room down by 8 points.
Well, the Packers only had 7 total yards in the first quarter, but then the final three quarters they had 399 total yards. So it wasn't necessarily a tale of two halves. It was a tale of the first quarter versus the last three. I mean, that was a huge difference, a huge disparity.
Right. It's hard to win games like that, The first quarter, like you said, it was lights out. The Giants – the offensive line was giving Eli protection. It's just it was a couple drop passes. I think on the third down pass to Odell, I think that was kind of high. Everybody expects him to catch everything because he's such a great player. But realistically, he was fully stretched out off the ground about 2 feet. That's a hard pass to catch. The one in the end zones with him and Shepard, I think, being the player that he is, everyone expects him to catch that. But, these things happen, and I'm just looking forward to next year. Hope we draft good. I'm not really a player basher, but I think we need help at the tight end position, definitely.
All right, Jimmy. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in.
After the game last night, I don't tweet during the games, folks. I know some people keep asking me why they don't hear from me during the games. I don't. I have too much going on, and then post-game shows and everything else. But overnight, I tweeted out this one comment, and I think it really sums everything up. Giants misfired on early chances to pounce. Failed to answer when Rodgers made his move and seized the momentum. Then it snowballed. In a nutshell, that's it. So please don't mistake any of the griping that we're talking about here in terms of things that could have happened or should have happened and where the Giants made misplays or where they came up short. Understand one thing. Aaron Rodgers was surgical after the first quarter, and his guys made plays, and they deserve to move on to the second round. And if they play like they did last night, the rest of the playoffs, they're probably going to the Super Bowl.
Well, their offense is clicking. They've scored 30 or more points in five straight games, and they've done it against very respectable defenses. And the Giants are included in that group.
Without question. Cobb was unbelievable coming off of a sprained ankle. He caught three touchdown passes.
And Devontae Adams was also very impressive. Also, Jared Cook, who didn't play week five against the Giants. He was a difference maker in the middle of the field. And, you know, speaking of Jared Cook, what's interesting, Paul, is the fact that right before the Hail Mary, they throw over the middle to Jared Cook. And Keenan Robinson made a nice play. He forced Jared Cook to drop it. But when you look back, the fact that the clock stops gives the Packers another opportunity for that Hail Mary, whereas if Cook catches the ball, maybe the clock runs out and they don't get a chance at that.
Isn't that funny you say that? I was sitting with Janae Coakley from SNY and Matt, her producer. They were with me. I was in the box for the first half on the field for the second half. And she said that to me. She's like, oh, 6 seconds left. They had no timeouts. Maybe he should have caught that ball and the clock would have run out. And then they couldn't even, like, have another snap. And I said, yeah, and it's Aaron Rodgers. Better be careful here.
Yeah. And that
Bingo.
Gave him just enough time.
Bingo. How many times has he done this before? I mean, come on. That's why nothing is impossible with that guy. He truly is great. But, again, as I also tweeted earlier before the game, you know, if he is so great, is he undefeated? Has he won every game he's ever played from high school all the way to the pros? I mean, if you want to just give him the Lombardi Trophy every July, do that. You know, I was the comments being made about him was basically he was Superman, and nobody had kryptonite, and there's no way this guy could ever lose. He played great last night, deserves every accolade he gets, but let's not go overboard. He's not the greatest quarterback who ever lived. Johnny Unitas is.
Oh. That's why it's best to just say there's the best quarterbacks in their respective time periods.
Yes.
Because the game has changed,
no
too.
No question.
But your point about the
Let
Hail Marys.
I'm with you there.
And how the Packers are synonymous with the Hail Marys. Lions last season, he throws it up to Richard Rodgers, his tight end. They win on the final play. And then remember in the playoffs against Arizona, he threw one up to Jeff Janis.
Yes.
Which I believe forced overtime, if memory serves me correct. So, I mean, you want to talk about their fluky plays? I've got three in the last two-plus seasons that the Packers have pulled off. It's remarkable that they've been able to execute on that front. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. We got Taro in New Jersey. Taro, what's happening? Taro, you there? Taro going once?
Yeah.
There we go. Taro, how's things? What do you got?
How you guys doing?
Doing all right.
I just really think the stage was too big for not just, like, the players, but maybe a little bit for McAdoo as well, because of his play calling and how the receivers just really didn't seem to show up by catching the balls, like, you know, Beckham, of course, you know, with the drop in the end zone and also the drop on the, like, curl route, like, in the flats.
Well, here's the thing, Taro. I mean, I don't necessarily buy into that narrative. I will say that there is certainly the lack of experience on this team with some of these young guys who have tasted
that.
The playoffs,
I mean,
for the first time. Nobody's going to debate that. But here's why I disagree with the stage being too big. A number of things that came to the forefront yesterday, they were magnified. But if you look at the season as a whole, Paul, and I'm curious your perspective too, we had been talking about some of these issues throughout the regular season. We had been talking about some drop passes, if you remember, throughout the season, which had stalled drives. We had talked about self-inflicted wounds in terms of penalties, such as procedural issues, false starts, and not getting plays off in time. We also talked about not being able to convert in short yardage situations on the ground, whether it be third and ones and fourth and ones. The problem is these things get magnified. They get put under the microscope and the magnifying glass when you're talking about the playoffs. So, once again, I'm not saying, oh, well, this is a continuation of everything that went wrong with the Giants, but we at times had been talking about some of the issues that I thought reared their ugly heads yesterday.
I completely agree with you, and I also think the loss of Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie in the game was, like, the worst thing that could have happened for the Giants, because that affected their defensive calling.
Well, and on that topic, and Paul, I'm sure you remember this, and I brought this up yesterday on the radio postgame show, Redskins game last year, second game against the Redskins coming off the bye. DRC got banged up in that game against Kirk Cousins. He goes to the sideline. The very first play, Kirk Cousins goes deep down the field to DeSean Jackson.
Yep.
I believe Trevin Wade came in to replace him. Cousins saw the switch and took advantage. So, you know, it's another example of it's a copycat league. Quarterbacks see personnel changes and they look to attack.
Look.
And in week five, like when he went out of the came out of the game, they always attacked like his areas.
Well,
he was defending.
DRC played on one leg because of a bad groin in Green Bay during week five.
Yeah.
And you know, it was really admirable for him to fight like he did. He just couldn't do it last night. Here's the problem. Against an elite quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, and there's no question he's on that elite shelf. You know, when you talk about breaking down where guys rank, I'm not so much in saying who's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I like to say that's your first category, and these guys belong on the top shelf. And you can pick any one of them. He's a guy who's on the top shelf, clearly, okay?
Mm-hmm.
To combat a guy like that, you need your best guys. You can't have less than your best out on the field if you are going to neutralize a top-shelf guy. And, of course, going into the game, Giants are thinking, as all of us football people are, well, they got Apple, they got DRC, they got Jenkins, they got Collins. You know, Hall may or may not be the safety. This NYPD secondary, at its best, with all those guys playing, they're going to neutralize Aaron Rodgers. But the problem was they weren't all five guys at their best for too long because quickly in the first quarter, DRC's gone, and the drop-off, no disrespect to Sensabaugh or Wade, DRC is top shelf. You need top shelf to compete against top shelf.
I couldn't agree with you more. But it was just amazing how dominant the Giants were in the first half, when they first quarter, when they had all their best.
I know.
Like, in the game.
Hey, that's the breaks.
It's just football, you know.
That's football. You got it. That's football.
That's just the way it is.
Absolutely.
And, you know, Jordy Nelson goes out, and the Packers still made plays. Randall Cobb steps up.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm not taking anything away from the Packers or Aaron Rodgers or
anything. You can't, because they played a hell of a game.
They deserve to win that game. Yeah.
Absolutely. And again, I think right now, just based on what I just saw yesterday, the problem is with this league, though, nobody plays the same every week. If the Packers do, they go to the Super Bowl. But watch them next week get blown out like 31-3 or something, right?
Well, that's what you're supposed to show you. It's an unpredictable league. But right now, they have been fairly consistent on the offensive end. That you have to at least give them.
Yeah.
Terrell, appreciate – real quick, what else you got?
No, I was just going to say, and as a huge Giant fan, I couldn't be happier if the Packers, like, destroyed the Cowboys, because I don't like seeing the Cowboys win.
Understandable. I'm sure many Giants fans can relate in terms of not wanting to see a division rival have some success. Moving along here on the phone lines, how about Oren in Richmond? Oren, what's happening?
Oh, hello, guys.
How we doing, Oren?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing much better than yesterday. Threw a remote at the TV, almost cracked it. it was because I really, I thought we were really, like, really going to win this game. And then, like, when they got close to the second quarter to end and all that, then you just saw the momentum change and all that, and it just started, especially with the Hail Mary and then the touchdown pass. And, it was a shootout. It was about to be a shootout, I felt like. But our offense wasn't that kind of offense, like last year's offense, where it could have been a shootout and stuff. And I feel like, I'm actually proud of this season, though, because we can look back and see what we need to work on. I feel like we should sign DRC and Jason Bureau back. I feel like they want to be back here. I also feel like that we should get, like, because I was looking at free agency yesterday, and I feel like we should get, like, a nice left tackle to compete with Ereck Flowers. One of them plays right, or one plays left, you know what I'm saying? Because I feel like we need, like, a veteran. I don't feel like Ereck Flowers is, like, even though they did pretty well yesterday, but I want us to have that kind of line like Aaron Rodgers did, because he had all day.
Well, Rodgers is also very good at extending plays with his footwork and so forth. And I wouldn't necessarily use Green Bay as the best example, Oren, as the way to build an offensive line, because he's had major issues in terms of pass protection during the course of his career.
Sure.
Yes, they played very well, but if you look at Green Bay, they've had guys in and out of the lineup. They've moved guys around because protection has been a major issue in Green Bay. It's just his elusiveness as a quarterback has been able to cover up some of their inefficiencies on the line.
One thing I would say this also, one, please just understand this. In terms of Rodgers' time, especially in the second half, the Giants did emphasize to their guys, control your rushing lanes. Don't get caught because he's going to run in a heartbeat. So they took out some of their aggressiveness in their front four's pass rush because they wanted to maintain lane integrity. And anytime you do that, you're going to give up a little extra foaming at the mouth to get to the quarterback because you want to make sure you stay home. And that's how you have to approach Aaron Rodgers. You do. You just have to. You don't have a choice.
And one more thing real quick.
Yeah.
This is one thing also I think we should do. I think I've been reading reports that, you know, Victor Cruz wants to come back and all that. I never thought I would say this. But I feel like we need to get like at least a 6'4" outside receiver to help Odell back him out and stuff. Because I saw the game, they literally have two guys on the line trying to cover him.
At one point, they actually did have two guys play press coverage right up on the line against Odell.
Yeah, it was on the left sideline, I believe he was lined up. Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
We need like a Tavares King or something big, like a, honestly, you know, like just a big threat receiver, get in the draft or something like free agency, just to help him out. Because Sterling Shepard, yeah, he's good in the slot, but we just need that outside threat just to help out.
I would agree with you. The Giants could use a taller, bigger target, much like what Plexico Burress brought to this team years ago.
Yes.
Another one.
Yes.
No question. I call him Spider-Man. Spider-Man kind of guy.
Appreciate the phone call.
I think, no, wait a minute. Jerry Reese calls him Spider-Man. I call him Skyscrapers.
In terms of the
6'3 guys with the long reach and the big wingspan. And so forth. I mean, Toomer was awesome. And Plexico was awesome. And Keem Nicks was awesome. Those guys were really good.
Well, and where do those guys make their money? In the red zone. And where have the Giants' struggles been this season? In the red zone. So that's where a bigger, taller receiver is on the eight.
Red zone helped by a, come on, 1-2-3 power running game.
Yes, well, that goes saying, too, running the ball. But I'm also saying in terms of the
fade
and Akeem Nicks and what they used to run.
Please alert the fans. Yes. We've got a change in our timing here. We're going to have to leave a few minutes early.
Yeah, we'll wrap up about 11:55 only because they adjusted the media availability. The players are not.
We got the audible a few minutes ago.
Correct. So we will still have plenty of time to get to your phone calls here in the remainder of the program. 201-939-4513. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Minow. Thanks so much for tuning in for Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We're recapping the wild card weekend matchup between the Giants and the Packers as the Packers are moving on to play Dallas 38-13. We've got Marco on the line. He's in Connecticut. Marco, what's happening?
Lance and Paul, thanks for taking my call today.
Hi.
You got it, Marco. What's on your mind?
Oh, there's a lot on my mind. Tough day. I'm going to try to be quick and also love to get your input on this. Start off with the positives. I think last night, you know, as these playoff games do come down to, it was 2-3 plays. I mean, taking the second half out, I think it was a couple plays that did it for me was the Giants not cashing in on those real, real big opportunities that they had in the first quarter. Had we known it was going to snowball into the rest of the game, I mean, I would never have thought. I mean, I thought Eli was just so on last night. And you know, Beckham drops the ball, and I'm thinking, hey, listen, if there's anybody that's going to drop a ball that he could come back and really make the other team pay for it, I think it's Beckham, and it never translated. I also think DRC going out was huge, and Rainey, the Hail Mary, huge play, and then the Rainey play with the ball going out of bounds to get the team backed up where they were. And have them have to punt to give Rodgers a short field. I mean, that was just all the recipe for a disaster. All right, going on now, let's get some positives in here. The season. I mean, we haven't been in the playoffs for 5 years. I mean, I couldn't have been happier to just to be part of this conversation again, man. It was so much fun this week to be among the teams that people are talking about,
right,
and to be relevant again. And I give so much credit to Jerry Reese and the free agency he had. I'm so excited about Landon Collins and his development, man. He was such a pleasant surprise this year. And there's a lot of things to be excited about. I'm excited about Perkins. I think Eli went out on the right note in these playoffs. And this is what I'm thinking. I'm thinking we come out, we have another sound draft. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Jerry be somewhat aggressive, moderately aggressive in free agency, knowing that this is a window here that we have to get with Eli. And I will also say this about Flowers. There's going to be a lot of talk about moving him around. And you guys jump in at any point here. I'd love to talk to you guys about this. There's going to be a lot of talk about Flowers. I'm actually thinking that Flowers should stay at left tackle. His play has not been great. But I think it complicates things greatly to move him. Say you move him to right tackle, or there's been talk to move him to guard. Well, now you have someone. Now you have a big position to need at left tackle. You're telling me in Eli Manning's, this is the window here. Like I mentioned, you're going to go out and draft a left tackle, or have to pay big money to bring in another left tackle. I think let's try Flowers out again. Let's give him some help. Let's try to get a blocking tight end in here, and maybe year two of Mike Solari with Flowers could translate into better play. I mean, he might not be a top left tackle, but it's got to be better than what it was this year.
Well, as you mentioned, you know, they did bring in a new offensive line coach this season under Ben McAdoo, so this would be another offseason that Mike Solari is able to work with Eric Flowers. And this was the other thing that we talked about, Paul, going all the way back to the early stages of the season, is the fact that Flowers suffered the ankle injury last season and was banged up for the majority of last year, which also then carried over into the offseason because, Marco, he needed the offseason to get fully healthy.
Right.
So I look at this offseason as really his true first professional, healthy NFL offseason where he can work on development a little bit more as opposed to working on getting back to full health. That's why this is a critical offseason for him, in addition to another offseason working with Mike Solari. And you combine both of those.
No doubt.
Let's see what happens and let's see what comes to fruition.
No doubt.
So that is something that you have to take into consideration. We lost Marco, Dave. Is that what you had mentioned? Appreciate the phone call, though, Marco. So, you know, that's something that I think everybody needs to keep in mind when you evaluate. And, you know, the other thing that I constantly bring up, because I hear this all the time, Paul, too, about, you know, moving offensive linemen around and moving Flowers to right tackle. In this day and age, in this league, everybody's got two great pass rushers. So they're going to find you, whether you stick them on the left side, you stick them on the right side. The Packers had Nick Perry and Clay Matthews. Do you think they're all of a sudden going to now just turn their attention to one side? No, they're going to look for matchups. That's how the NFL works.
I don't want to get ahead of myself here with either the draft or free agency, but only because you addressed it. And I'm not going to get into names here because this is foolishness.
Oh, it's way too early with respect to
the
that.
The list of current unrestricted free agent left tackles. This is probably the most unattractive list that I have seen in a long time.
So you're not.
I'm just saying,
right now. Yeah, looking at the
right
list.
Right now, and don't go through the names because I don't want to get people all panicky.
Yeah.
But it's not pretty. There's nothing there that's going to make you jump out of your seat and run to the market to buy.
And the one thing you don't do in the draft, and the one thing you don't do in free agency is give a person money or reach for a guy just because it may appear to be a position you want to bolster or add some depth. It's all about the quality of the player at the end of the day. And you have to understand, is the player an upgrade as opposed to are we just bringing in a body for the sake of bringing in a body? Let's head back to the lines. We got Rob in Hartford. Rob, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, man? How are you?
Doing well, Rob.
Hi.
What do you got for us?
Hey, what I can honestly say is Eli cannot be used as a scapegoat for yesterday's loss. Eli played exceptionally well. There were some drop passes by ODB and Shepard, you know, and I'm really proud of how he looked yesterday. But it's just the second half meltdown that I was a little concerned about. And I just wish they would have gave Jennings the ball a little more, kept him in the game as him being a veteran. because of the play where Clay Matthews pushed Perkins off the ball and recovered the fumble. I don't see Jake Jennings making that same mistake.
Well, that goes back to being alert on the field. You're referring to the play where it initially was still a live ball.
They may have thought
it was an incomplete pass,
right,
and then Perkins didn't jump on the ball. Clay Matthews barreled his way over
and recovered the ball.
And that comes with experience. I mean, that's an example of, yes, if Jennings is there, he's a veteran. Maybe he's experienced that a little bit more. It's possible, but let's be honest. And I know you're bringing up an example, and it's fair, Rob. At that point in the game, in my opinion, whether they recover that fumble or not, the game is done at that point.
Done.
So, you know, we could bring up a lot of other plays that I think shifted momentum. That's not the one that I'd put at the top of the list. But still a learning experience, though, for Paul Perkins. No doubt about it.
Yes. All right. Thank you.
You got it, Rob. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. And a lot of mental mistakes that came to the forefront yesterday, whether it be on special teams, whether it be on offense, whether it be on defense, you know, those breakdowns. Like you said, Paul, you go up against Aaron Rodgers, you can't give him half a gift. You give him one gift, you give him another gift. He's the type of quarterback that at the end of the day, he's going to take advantage. He's going to capitalize.
Look at it this way. The Giants needed to go in there and play, I don't even know if it had to be their A game. Their B-plus game might have been enough to win. Instead, what they do? They maybe their C game? Maybe? I mean, we just talked about a lot of stuff that they didn't do right. Maybe their C game? That's not enough to beat Aaron Rodgers in Lambeau Field in the playoffs. It's just not going to be.
And 13 points is not enough to overcome those issues on top of topping a team that has averaged about 30 points per game. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. We got Kareen in Brooklyn. Kareen, what's happening?
Yeah, how are you, Lance? How are you, Paul?
Hi.
Doing well. How's things with you?
Good. So I had the opportunity to meet Paul back in training camp, and I remember him telling me back then that this team is going to go as far as the offensive line is going to take them. And I think that, you know, that was 100% right, and that's why our season's over at this point, because the line just couldn't get it done. You know, and all the complaints about Eli, it's because he had happy feet all year because he had no time. You know, so I think that, you know, that's the main area of concern, along with tight ends for next year. And hopefully we can fix it and build upon this 11-win season.
Well, you know what? There are 20 teams that did not make the NFL playoffs this year that wish they were the Giants. And I think every Giants fan, you know, I said before the season, 10 wins and a one and done would be a real successful year for them, being on the basis that they had made the playoffs in the previous four. Well, they won 11. And one and done. I think it's a successful season.
Well, not to mention also the fact that the defense goes from the 32nd ranking to the 10th overall ranking, and that's a huge stride. Plus, you have a nucleus that can stay together, whether it be Landon Collins, Jenkins. We'll see what happens with JPP and Hankins. There's clearly opportunities to bring them back. But, you know, you have pieces. This is not a defense that I think is all of a sudden going to be separated after one season.
I don't think so, but
we'll
see.
I'd be very surprised if that happens.
A lot of unknowns. A lot of unknowns.
Anything else, Kareen?
I also wanted to ask about, you know, all these mental errors. Is it the fault of the coach? Is it just, you know, it happens? What are your feelings about coming out and, you know, just making so many mental errors in a playoff game?
Are drop passes mental errors? Four drop passes, two of them for touchdowns in the first quarter. Are those mental errors? I look at those as physical errors. And if those are made, are we talking about mental errors? I don't know. Look, here's what I will say. You got a favorite team. You watch that favorite team each and every week and each and every play. And so you notice every single thing that maybe they do wrong. I'd love to have a stat chart. Let's see if Pro Football Focus can do this. And, of course, they can't. I'm being facetious. But give me a stat chart of how many mental errors every single team in the NFL makes every week. And then let's find out, oh, are they average or is this not a very smart team? Or is this a brilliant team that never makes mental errors? We don't have anything to judge that on.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
the timing of it is unfortunate, but, you know, I mean, to sit here and analyze why they happen, I'm sure it's a variety of different factors, Kareem, but, you know, sometimes it's the lack of concentration, sometimes it's the weather that's a contributing factor, sometimes you also need to give credit to the defense making a good play and flustering the wide receiver. I mean, we could sit here and we could go over a variety of different facets.
How about that being just another factor in the quicksand of parity that this National Football League has become? How about that?
Where the margin for error is minute and also the difference between teams is not very far apart because the little things like that in the end decide games. I mean, even though this game was lopsided, we're still talking about very detailed plays that change the outcome of this contest. So
yep.
That's an example of parity right there.
Yep.
And, Kareem, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Before we wrap up, just want to maybe get to a tweet or two because I know there's a number of people that were chiming in via social media who may have not had an opportunity to – join us here on the phone lines, and then obviously we're going to run for some media availability here. But let's just
got to get going
run through Twitter. Absolutely, Chris at DMaggle01us. In all, a marked improvement from the past year, but there's a huge problem with the offense that needs to be corrected. He's alluding to the fact that they averaged 27 points per game last season, and that dropped down to under 20 this year. And clearly, that is probably one of the most surprising developments. But penalties, lack of red zone efficiency is two things that you could point to why the touchdowns went down. I actually went back. I looked at the chart. They had 41 offensive touchdowns last year, Paul. Mm-hmm. I removed the defensive scores,
right,
the special
right,
team
right,
scores.
Right.
And this year they wound up with 30. So there was a difference of 11 touchdowns in terms of what the offense produced from 15 to 16.
It's a
sizable difference with respect to that. Let's just take another quick glance. Big Dash, 07088. At Colwis 88, Rodgers had at least 6 seconds to throw the ball, sometimes more. That was the problem there. We had mentioned that in the second half, he certainly got comfortable. He was able to elude the pressure and look down the field. Carlos Rivera at Bronx Bomber 1701. If the team could fix the issues with the run game in the offensive line, can Paul Perkins run for 1,000 yards next season, he's asking. Well, he certainly flashed. There's a lot of positives that Paul
I wouldn't
Perkins
put it past
showcased.
Him.
I mean, if
I
he
put
gets
it past
the
him.
Bulk of the workload, he definitely could do some damage. And we'll certainly answer the rest of your tweets off the air, but we appreciate everybody for tuning a little bit earlier. Remember, we started the program earlier just to obviously fit in the media availabilities. But we'll have Big Blue Kickoff Live all off-season long. It'll return to its normal time slot noon on Tuesday, and we will have full coverage of the combine, the draft, you name it. We'll be with you all off-season. The season may be over, but the coverage certainly doesn't end here on Giants.com. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Have a good one.